Welcome to SportsBeat KC, the Kansas City Stars daily sports podcast presented by First Federal. It's Friday, September 30th, and I'm Blair Kirkhoff. We're talking Sporting KC and the Kansas City Current on today's show with the Stars soccer writer Daniel Sperry. For only the second time since 2011, Sporting won't reach the MLS playoffs. The rough start to the season left them in too big of a hole to climb, but they're playing well down the stretch. We talk about what went wrong early and what's going right lately for coach Peter Vermees' club. After a break, the discussion shifts to the Current and what a season they're having. They've already clinched a spot in the NWSL playoffs, and now it's a matter of seeding. A year after finishing last, the Current is in the postseason. Well done. Okay, let's get started. Hey, Daniel, it's been too long. How you been doing?
I've been doing good, man. It's been a busy fall season, too, between both the Current and Sporting wrapping up everything this year. So lots to talk about for both teams. And, you know, they both have been very exciting, basically, since August 1st.
Yeah, for sure. One team is going to play longer this season than the other, and it is the Kansas City Current. But we're going to start our conversation today with Sporting Kansas City, which for the second time since 2011 will not be in the playoffs, the MLS playoffs. And Daniel, as we look back on how the season unfolded, I don't know if you could have predicted it, but, you know, after the first, I don't know, was it 15 or 16 games when Sporting had only won a couple of them, that's when you knew that it was going to be a really tough climb at that point. And of course, they have fallen short of the playoffs. But the bad start is what did it for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think talking with Roger Espinoza yesterday, or Tuesday, depending on what day we're recording, if I can get my dates straight here. Talking with Roger Espinoza on Tuesday, he talked about that as, you know, if you don't pick up your points early, you get punished. There's a lot, and even during the stretch, like I think they're unbeaten in six or seven games here. There's points that they've dropped there that they could still be firmly in the playoff race if they don't lose a two-goal lead on the road in Austin, and they maybe don't give up that late penalty kick to the LA Galaxy. I think that's 4 points that would put them at 43, which is just 2 points behind the playoff line with two to go. I mean, even with how bad their start was, they've been so good now that they're really getting punished for their start. And, you know, there are games that you go back and look at that against teams that are now below them in the standings. And like, you know, there's a road game that I was at in Chicago that was a pretty dismal performance, but there were, you know, they made a few errors that led to the goals against them. They probably could have gotten out there with a point. There's a couple of home games. There's a stretch of home games in May and April where, you know, I think they drew three games in a row at home. And, you know, or lost and then drew two. And it was each game had winnable moments for Sporting that they didn't convert and didn't capitalize on. And, you know, those 4, 5, 6 points now that could be added to their total in the standings. I mean, you're looking at them being above the playoff line at the moment with two games left, maybe even pushing for a home playoff game. So if you don't take care of those things earlier in the season, and get those points early in the season, then it very quickly becomes almost too insurmountable for you.
For sure. And one of the reasons that they got off the slow start was injuries. And in sports, there's always any coach or manager will tell you it's a next man up mentality. But when you lose a player with the ability of an Alan Pulido, and it's difficult to overcome that and replace that.
Correct. And there's goal scoring things. There's things that he does when he drops deep. I would almost argue that Gadi Kinda might have been a more important loss for them. Even when you took out Kyrie Shelton at times this year, or took out Willie Agata since he's been here, who's been scoring, when Eric Tommy's in there, it's an entirely different team. And when you have a creative player that can progress the ball through the middle third of the field into the attacking third and is really comfortable on the ball and picking up touches in the penalty area and stuff like that, and getting the ball, the danger zone, the danger play, the majority of the play with the ball much closer to goal. It does a whole lot of things in alleviating the back line's pressure that they have. Things that they're dealing with are more manageable. There's less numbers coming at them from the middle when they're in the middle third of the field. It changes everything. And so the fact that Gadi Kinda was, you know, at the beginning of the season, we knew there was going to be no Alan Pulido, and that was okay. But we didn't know until the end of April that Gadi Kinda was going to miss the rest of the season. There had been, when the season started, you expected Gadi Kinda to come back into that midfield and be so crafty and so dangerous like he is, and being able to just eliminate players on a quick turn and a quick wiggle of his hips. I mean, he's got two players behind him and he's gone bearing down on the back line. I mean, he's just an incredibly dynamic playmaker in the middle that maybe helps Kyrie Shelton score more goals and maybe helps that forward fill in for Alan Pulido a little bit better. But, you know, I don't think either of them, both of them are missed in different ways, and both of them, you know, their absences are incredibly detrimental to what happened this season for
Sporting. Yeah. So
I would just say I as Pulido can score those goals, yes, but there are times where you really need the middle of the field to be able to progress the ball, and they didn't have someone that had that high attacking mindset like Eric Tommy or like Gadi Kinda had, and it didn't develop in any of the younger players that they tried to play there, and so you know that obviously you see when they get Eric Tommy and Willy Agata in, then all of a sudden things really start to click for him.
Yeah, what a difference those two have made. Is it seven goals for?
Willy has seven in ten games. Seven goals, 10 games total. And he's got two assists in there. He is, for all of the new players who arrived, including Gareth Bale, including Chiellini, including, you know, the big two Italians that they added in Toronto, and in Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. Willy Agata is third of all the on goal contributions for all of the newcomers. And he was a very unheard of, unheralded striker that came from, you know, a mid-table team in the Israeli Premier League. And now all of a sudden the guy's scoring goals and Peter's comparing him to Mo Johnston, who's a Sporting legend. And both of them in very different ways, because of their personalities are so very different, have really made a deep impact on this team during this stretch run. And it's made them play some of the best soccer in the league since they arrived.
Yeah. And I know the transfer window is what it is. It'd have been great to get him if they'd gotten here a little sooner, you know.
Correct. And I think another thing too that doesn't help is, you know, last year I was looking at it, the Sporting played their 30th game of the season, I believe, 30th or 29th game of the season. It was October 23rd was when they last played, when they played the Sounders in October last season. They still had 3 or 4 weeks of games left to go. At least 4 more games from that point on. At this point we have 2 games left and we're not even in October. We're barely at October 1 yet. Right. So even with the way the calendar shifted because of the World Cup, you know, the window stayed when it was for the transfer window for them to come in. However, there's less games on the back end of it too, and more games got played. So even then, with it taking a couple of weeks, you know, last year they probably would have been maybe 14, 15, 16 games into the season, versus this year where they were already 20 games, 21 games deep by the time those two made an appearance. And at that point, you're really, really lost in trying to get points that quickly and that many points to get you back up the table.
Yeah, so a little unlucky from the calendar standpoint this year. Yep. Hey, the other day or recently, Sporting handed out some hardware, identified some honorees for the year. Johnny Russell was named team MVP, and I saw where Andrew Fontas was the defensive player of the year. Daniel Salloway, Offensive Player of the Year. Did Sporting get those right? Did the right guys win the awards?
Yeah, I think so. I Johnny is the heartbeat and the soul of the team. Mm-hmm. He does so much in terms of leadership on the field. He does a lot of incredible defensive work. There are times where him just tracking back and making a tackle kind of changes the mentality, snaps a team out of a rut where they're, you know, not really pressing as hard as they should or something like that. So I'd get them doing that. Honestly, they could have gone back and forth between he and Shalloway. I think Shalloway has more total goal contributions this year as well. And I think it was a good way to make sure that all the players are honored for what they've done. Russell has his goals. Daniel has his goals as well. And sharing the newcomer award for Willie Agata and Eric Tommy was perfect because I think in the way those two go simultaneously, they should have done that. I know there's some dispute about the goal of the year. Certain folks think Eric Tommy's goal against the LA Galaxy, where he took the ball down on his chest and turned on a half volley and ripped it, was a more incredible, more difficult goal. I will take Roger pressing, for his goal of the year in Montreal, where he pressed them really, really hard and ripped a shot from about 40 yards out that just made it over the top of the goalkeeper. We had a fun conversation with him about that because, of course, Labonta, his wife, scored an absolute beautiful goal this weekend. And so we were asking who he thought was better, and the answers between the two of them were quite good. So, Lowe's been known for her celebrations, and Roger said, "Nah, I'm going to stick to what I do. I'll stick to what I do best." But Roger definitely deserved goal of the year for that one too. So I think they really did get all of the awards right. And I'm glad that a guy like Kyrie Shelton was honored for his humanitarian work as well. When he returned, the conversation with him was when he returned for the 2020 season, because he was with Sporting in 2018, went to Germany in 2019, didn't really fit in with the team as they had moved and got promoted to the Bundesliga and wasn't getting a ton of time. So he came back to Sporting in 2020, ahead of 2020 season. And the conversation for him was he was just so excited to get back to his Big Buddies program and some of the philanthropic work that he's been doing outside of it. He became really involved in the Black Players for Change organization in MLS. Their fans can have their thoughts about everything that goes on the field, but he's a really high quality person as well. And someone who really invests his time into the community and into people. And so I think it's good that he got honored for that as well, alongside Johnny, who does the same, just always in the community, always doing fantastic things. So in general, all the awards, I think they got most of those things right.
Very good. I agree with you about the goal of the year. I thought that was what I loved about Espinoza's goal of the year is it took a couple of seconds for the ball to get to the goal. It was so, the distance was so much. It was so enjoyable just to watch the goal. I think Nate Buchanan called it like a chip, but it was, it was more than that. It was a chip to travel 40 yards.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a good golf shot equivalent. More, it would be more like he punched it, right? Like he just kind of got enough behind it. It didn't get really high,
right.
Stayed low, but it snuck right into that corner. It was perfectly.
Yeah. He wasn't just off the green as a chip shot would be in golf. He was out in the fairway. okay. Hey, just let's do this. A quick thought on what off-season priorities should be in a general way, because this is a discussion I want to have with you on another show when the season ends. But what, just generally speaking, what should Sporting's priorities be heading into 2023?
I tend to think more towards their back line. They've created a significant amount of depth with their attack now with Agata and Tommy in there and with Gadi and Pulido You know, hopefully being back full swing and ready to go. There's no indications that they won't be. But, you know, you still never know with a season away and the injuries like that. But they've created so much depth up front, and retaining Daniel Shalloway was going to be a big priority, I thought. The fact that that's already done, we don't have to worry about that and talk about that. I mean, Daniel Shalloway will play for Sporting next season. That's a huge thing for them as well. So I think they've got enough depth there. The two areas that I'm looking at, you know, both Izzy Mattmarine and Andrea Fontes' contracts are up this year. Both of them are the same amount, or a little over $1 million, which is a lot. They're over the designated player threshold, which means there's a lot of targeted allocation money, and the way the league sets things up, there's a lot of money being invested into those two roster spots. And I don't know if they're going to continue to do that. Do they continue to do that with both of them? Do they try and bring them back at lower numbers? That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. And then recently, you know, before, if you'd asked me if there was one more thing that they should have added in the summer, I thought maybe they could have gone out and got a number six. However, which is a defensive midfielder, in the way Peter's system is, they have the single defensive midfielder, single pivot that sits in front of the two center backs in that hole. And Remy Walter has kind of made that his own. And Peter has always called him a number eight that can play the six. And I think Remy has really turned into a true defensive midfielder that can handle that single pivot role. You know, listeners are kind of have something coming on that a little bit later this week too. But if Vermees can view, or if Vermees views Walter as a long-term solution, number one solution to the number six, then I think that changes how that role, that need is filled. I think they probably should look at another outside back too. But really center back, outside back, number six, I think those are the key areas for them. Because if they, you know, depending on what happens, whether Roger wants to keep playing or not, they have Felipe Hernandez who can play as an eight. They can probably play Tommy and Gotti together in the midfield and probably against certain opponents as well. So I'm sure they'll make another addition to the midfield. I'll just be curious to see where it is, because I think that will end up kind of indicating where Peter actually believes Remy Walter is on the depth chart at that number six position, because he really has come along with that over this stretch, and he's played every single game this year. He's played every single game since Tommy and Agata arrived as the six, and he has not let go of that spot at all.
Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back, we've got to talk about the Kansas City Current, the playoff bound Kansas City Current. We will be right back.
Buying your first home is a huge milestone, but the journey there can be confusing. First Federal Bank of Kansas City is here to make it simple. After nearly a century of serving the KC community, our loan advisors have experience in every type of housing market. With a short phone call, we can give you a free rate quote and talk through loan options. No pressure, no obligation. The road to home ownership can be simple with First Federal Bank. Get started with a free quote at ffbkc.com/homes. First Federal Bank of Kansas City, because banking is personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, this is Blair. There are several ways to access the Star Sports section. Let me tell you about a couple of them. There is Sports Pass. For $12.99 a month, you get unlimited digital access to all of the Star Sports content, including beat writing, columns, features, pretty much everything we write. The deal renews monthly until you tell us to cancel. For $159.99 a year, you get everything the Star has to offer digitally, including sports and the e-edition. Go to kansascity.com and drop down to the bottom of the page where it says start a subscription for more information. Your support has never been more important. As always, thanks for reading and listening. Hey, we're back on the SportsBeat KC podcast talking soccer with Daniel Sperry, who covers soccer for the Kansas City Star, both Sporting Kansas City and the Kansas City Current. We just finished talking about Sporting KC. Their season is going to end when the regular season's over, but the Kansas City Current is continuing on into the postseason, and it's an amazing story, Daniel, isn't it? The first-year organization that that finished last in the standing a year ago, and now they have an opportunity. Well, they're in the playoff. They're in the playoffs, and It's just a matter of where they're going to be seated. there are all kinds of scenarios out there for them, but let's keep it simple. If the current wins at Louisville on Saturday, what are the seeding possibilities?
Yeah, so if they win on Saturday, they're guaranteed third place.
No worse than third.
No worse than third. It's not possible. They would, regardless of what happens with San Diego, everyone below them is a point or so below them. We have an article out on it. If you want to check it out, it's kind of broken down most of those scenarios. So if they win, they finish third regardless. To finish second, they need a Portland Thorns loss. Who are playing Gotham, who have lost, I think, now 13 or 14 games in a row. I mean, it's a brutal stretch for Gotham. They're coming up against the buzzsaw that is the Portland Thorns right now. And so I have a very hard time foreseeing Portland Thorns lost. But if that happens, that opens the door with the current win for them to finish in second or potentially first. So to finish second, they need a loss from one of Portland or OL Reign. OL Reign can draw and the current can win, and that can also allow them to leapfrog. So to finish second, they need a loss from either team or a draw from the Reign. And to finish first, they need both teams to not win. If Portland draws, that creates a problem because there's a 25 goal difference in goal differential between the Thorns and the Current. So that would mean that the Current would need to beat Racing Louisville by 25, because in the event of a draw, Portland's goal differential is not getting cut into. It'll stay at what it is. So unless the Current have a 25-0 result up their sleeve, I think it would be really hard. I'd be very shocked to see them end up in first, truly. But an opportunity to win the NWSL Shield is still out there, and until the games are played, that opportunity still exists. So we'll see what happens there. But most likely scenario, I could see them as maybe jumping into second or standing pat at third, which is still an incredible spot to be in. Guarantees you a home game and probably will keep you away from going to Portland for a semifinal as well.
Right. So the value for finishing first or second, as you said, is a first round bye, but third or fourth means you get a home game in the semifinals, and that's absolutely what you want.
Yes, third or fourth is a home game in the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals. Yep.
And the semifinal host goes to seed one and seed two. So that's the advantage there, is you play one game and you're in the championship game at home to win. You get one game to win at home and you're in the championship game if you end up in those top two seeds, which would be incredible and very ideal for the Current. It's just going to be a little difficult. They're going to need some teams who are towards the bottom of the table to step up to help them out on Saturday.
Right. And if they get that 25-0 victory at Louisville, look, it could be 26-1 too, right? It's just, as long as it's by 25.
Yep. Concede five, score 30. Go for it.
I'll tell you what, that speaks to also what a great chemistry team, at least in my opinion, the Current is, that basically they are even on goal differential this year and yet stand, I think, 10-5-6, overall, with an overall record, which means they win all the close games. They win a lot of one goal games. And as we talked, as with Sporting, as we talked about earlier, the Current got off to a slow start, right? They were winless in their first five with just one draw, and then turned it around.
Yeah, and some of that was a little bit of schedule congestion. Some of it, the Challenge Cup created a little bit of that, where they were through May. I think the Current were playing nearly every other point of the week. They'd have a midweek and a Saturday, a midweek and a Saturday. And when most of those are on the road, that's a lot of heavy travel for them. They don't come back when they have back-to-back road games like that. So they just go on to the next city. And so they're away for a while. They were beat up with COVID and injuries. I mean, they really had gotten put through the ringer. So then, you know, it's funny. We talk about their opponent, Louisville, this weekend. They played each other on May 30th, which is when you were out there with us for that very gritty 1-0 win against Louisville. From that day forward, that's when the Current started their 13-game unbeaten streak. At that same day, that started a 13-game winless streak for Louisville, who did not win again until the Current lost to end their 13-game unbeaten streak. It was a pretty incredible stretch there. But yeah, that tough start, kind of, you know, maybe if they pick up a couple of different points, a penalty call in a couple games correctly goes the other way. There's a few dubious calls that kind of nicked points away from them. They had a couple of one goal losses in Seattle and Angel City that were, you know, with multiple players out with COVID. They had it 0-0 late in the game, and, you know, a late own goal or a late headed goal after their 40th cross that OL Reignan put in on them finally, you know, broke the dam. So, you know, those are situations where, yes, that was a really frustrating time for them. But, you know, I think for them to come out of it on the other side and not, you know, plummet as we've seen other teams in the league do and go on those massive winless streaks or even losing streaks, if you're Gotham, was just a testament to, as you said, the chemistry and the culture that Matt Potter's built here pretty quickly of, we're just on to the next thing. We're not going to let things pile up, and, you know, there's no excuses for what we're going through. We try and get through it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we try the next time to try to win the next time that it comes up. And, you know, things really started clicking. And, you know, even this weekend, they finally got their first multi-goal win in that 3-0 victory over Washington. It probably could have been 5 or 6. There was a couple goals that were correctly called offside, and there was a couple chances that they had that they probably could have done a better job finishing. And I mean, it really could have been quite the blowout for them on Sunday. So this team's really kind of come around, and man, they're incredibly fun to watch too, with all their celebrations, all the everything. But you know, you go back, I was talking with some of them about going back to that start, that game against Louisville was really a reminder that, okay, we can do this. We can get back. We can win. It wasn't pretty. We played, you know, they would agree that it was not their best game, and they didn't play very well, but they still got the result. And it was a belief that they could figure out a way to win. And it has spurred them on to get results when they aren't playing very well and when they are playing very well too.
You mentioned Coach Matt Potter, and doesn't seem like there's an interview that I hear or have with him without his mentioning culture and the culture of this team. Look, I don't know if you have to win to develop culture, or the culture develops produces the winning. I don't know what comes first, but whatever it is, the Current seem to have it, right? And his role in developing it has to be acknowledged as well.
Correct. And I would think that it would be from most people I've talked to. He's definitely at the forefront, if not the lead candidate to win the Coach of the Year job, just for the turnaround and how impressive everything's been. But I mean, it really is all about creating a belief too, because these were good players. A lot of these players were on this roster last year too. You have a player like Haley Mace, who's turned into a U.S. Women's National Team caliber defender and wingback. That's something. Cece Kaiser came here and had never scored more than like 3 or 4 goals in her career, and she scored 7 since she's been traded in the middle of June. You know, I think those are things that are just when you get people in the right places, and his whole thing has been to make sure that people are playing in places that are fit their strong suit. He's going to tailor his system to the players that he has and the assets that they have as players on the field. And it's created a culture of the players feel like they're taken care of as people, they're taken care of as, you know, players and pros, and that, you know, their coach has kind of got their back. But He's also created a culture that everybody believes in everything that they're doing wholeheartedly. And, you know, I don't, and as I wrote an article about that a couple of weeks ago, I think that was entirely evident in every single conversation I had with them, was that, man, I mean, there really is a true belief in everyone's abilities and in each other and in the plan and in the process going forward. And when you have total buy-in like that, usually a plan from a professional coach, as long as it's, you know, coherent enough, gets through, and it's definitely been the case for them.
Okay, we're recording this on Thursday, and a week from today, going to be a big event, the dedication or the groundbreaking for the current new stadium. That's going to be fun, and hope to see you out there, Daniel. And I really appreciate you're spending time with us to talk Kansas City Current and Sporting Kansas City. It's absolutely been a fun season. Need to see Sporting Kansas City play well here at the end of the year, and just fantastic that the Current is having the season that it is having. So, all right, Daniel, let's do it again soon. Thanks a lot.
Yes, will do. Thanks. We will definitely see you out there at the groundbreaking.
That'll do it for today and this week on SportsBeat KC. Thanks to our production team of Monty Davis, Randy Mason, George Howard, and Jeff Rosen, and to our sponsor, First Federal. Their website is ffbkc.com. Tip of the cap to Daniel Sperry for sharing his soccer insights. Morning Sports Edition is your one-stop shopping in the sports page. It's packed with local and national stories. Check it out at liveedition.kansascity.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another SportsBeat KC.